is a production of Cornell University.
All right, so in the interest of time, we're going to go ahead and get started. A couple of additions and some move around to the agenda. Just really quick, I'd like to see if we could move the mission vision resolution up to business of the day after Paul Bursick. That way we can vote on that if we decide it's appropriate. We can move forward with that and we don't have to wait for another meeting for that to go into old business. So is there anybody that would like to move that up into new business? Or sorry, business of the day?
Motion to move it to business.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
Second. All right, is there any dissent on that? All right, seeing no dissent, that carries. So mission vision resolution will be under there. The other thing I'd like to do is ask permission to, after we approve the minutes, turn it over to Tanya for a second. She has to step away early, so I just want to make sure she has time because we skipped over her because of time last week. So want to move Tanya after approval of the minutes. Is there any objection to that? All right, seeing none. The last thing is, too, under new business, there was a late addition resolution, which is welcoming the incoming president, and BJ can talk more about that when that comes up, but we'd like to add that to business of the day. Is there any objection? Or, sorry, to new business?
No.
No? Okay. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes from September 17th? Are there any changes, additions, subtractions, corrections? All right, seeing none, is there a motion to carry that?
Move to approve.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
All right, is there any dissent? All right, seeing no dissent, that carries. I'll now turn it over to Tanya to talk about an issue that came up with one of our constituents.
Sure, so I was in an informal coffee meeting about 2 weeks ago, and an employee brought up a question to Mary about our parental leave policy, and her concern was that in her particular case, her husband is unemployed, and her concern is that she has to save, you know, essentially all of her sick time and all of her vacation time to be able to take advantage of the parental leave. Right now, you know, if you have a child with short-term disability for half pay, and then you supplement if you want. Her concern is that she would love to see us have a policy that would fully subsidize an employee's parental leave, and in her opinion, 4 months would be an appropriate timeline. So she posed this question to Mary, and Mary ever so kindly said, you should bring that to the EA. So since I was sitting there, she brought it to me, and I told her I would bring it forward as something that we should have our policy committee look at. I just wanted to throw that out there to kind of get some initial thoughts. You know, is this something that we're willing to kind of look at, explore, maybe benchmark against other universities?
Open the floor for discussion. Go ahead.
The question, we should have followed this. The supplement, in other words, if you want to have full pay, that's when you use up your vacation, yeah. That's the thing.
So you'll use your vacation and or sick days to supplement if you want to continue to have full pay. Your short-term disability will pay either essentially 6 weeks for a regular birth, 8 weeks for a C-section, or if you have other complications that can be longer, but in order to keep full pay, you need to supplement the rest of your time if you get sick or vacation. Also, when you first go out, that first 5 days that you're out, you have to pay for full thing. So you're using 5 full days of that. And, you know, Linda and I talked about a little bit, chime in, Linda.
Yeah. So that's disability. That's not correct because you're medically not able to work. Your position determines that you're able to return to work. That is what takes them to work. We have 4 half weeks of preventative. And any one with a new child, whether it's adoption or birth, anything. So they can extend on to 10 weeks if the regular birth of half pay, or longer if the document is disabled because of 6 weeks, or that's the best part of how it is. Which is honestly relatively competitive with what's out there, but as the chair of the personnel policy committee, I would be happy to look into it, and if anyone else is interested in participating on that, I'm really welcome anyone else, but I think it's a bigger issue because that would require us to change our disability, which could be pretty big. So there might be other creative ways that maybe we could look at something similar to what we did with Sorority, where we were able to kind of find a little bit of something people were familiar of, which is what we did that after the 3 days, if someone doctors, disabled them and said they weren't able to work still, then they could go on half pay and most people wonder that they had that as an option for a few of the weeks. So I think that was a kind of value that I think we were able to highlight that and actually put that in the policy for people with algorithm adoption and maybe we can look at what other creative ways we could try to make sure people were aware of what other resources and what else we might be able to do. I'd be happy to look at it.
When was the last time or when was the parental leave last evaluated and or?
Well, competitively in our best employer applications, we're constantly looking at that.
Right.
And then in the office that files for all the best employer applications
coming
out. So we do look at that fairly regularly. And we do look against, so within the last 10 years.
Yeah.
We do fairly regular review of that last kind of year of what is out there. So, but like I said, I would be happy to, and maybe we can just have a point of participation.
And she's more than willing to accept her party, and she's a fairly newer employee, and she's very excited to get involved, so I think this is a great way to kind of get her in and then maybe get her a lot of body involved with the EA.
She feels that a 4 month leave would be an appropriate amount of time, and I think she and Madison is just talking first through return to work, so not right with pay.
So just wondering, is that true to take all of the legal rules in the United States? I know the national people do get 3 4 months.
I know.
Yeah. I don't know that.
So what's the total amount of time that someone can be out for childbirth? So they have their sick and then their disability and then it's parental leave kicks in? Okay. So 4 is parental leave, which anybody gets, male, female.
At half
pay and then supplement.
And then, right, and then the remainder of it is
if you don't have.
Gotcha.
But the job is still well for you.
Okay. So is this something we officially want to throw over to the policy committee to take a look at and ask maybe they come back with a formal response, either, hey, we're actually in the right spot? Because I want to make sure that when we send stuff to committees, things don't sort of fizzle out with no response. I'd like to make sure we have something officially that we can enter into the record of, here was the question posed. Mm-hmm. Here's what we've done, here's our response, and sort of enter that into the record. So is there a motion to send that to committee?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, to me, it sounds like they actively and regularly.
But is this something we want to specifically charge them
for? Respond?
I think we should really look at it so we can give her more of a detailed answer.
Yeah.
Or that we got your concern and we showed up and we're doing something about it.
I second that.
Yeah.
And to educate ourselves.
And parental leave is open to any parent, not just for the mother, but it is.
No, I'm
I'm just saying in general that it isn't just a college that is part of our population, but all of
us. If you adopt a 16-year-old, you can still take it.
And so is adoption the only 4 weeks, or is it a full? It's a 6 week. Okay. So I'd move that we send it over to the policy committee and then ask, you know, sometime, whatever a reasonable time period is.
Is a month, like the
2 months?
November 5th meeting, just a report, is that crazy? Yeah.
It's going to take a little while to even have a traditional meeting and everything, so, you know, I think...
Before the end of semester?
Before the end of semester.
Great.
Because there's going to be
some research
on it.
Okay.
So we're not having a separate meeting with Mary after this? Because normally I thought we had one with just Mary, but it looks like they're together.
So to explain that time, it's typically David and Mary, but this year because of sesquicentennial, Mary and Glenn Altshuler are going to different meetings. So is that what we're talking about right now, right?
Yeah, so...
I thought what would be cool is if we report this back when Mary is in the room.
Yeah.
Just Mary,
and then Mary and David. So what has happened this semester, and this semester only, is that Mary and David are coming together. Mary was coming with Glenn Altshuler to talk about sesquicentennial and the staff for scheduling purposes and the hectic nature of the semester. Mary's office asked that we combine those two meetings into one long meeting. So that's to help with scheduling. All three of them are coming. Mary and David will have their time. First, we'll have our dedicated time with the president, and then we'll have time with Glenn and Mary separate from the president.
So it's going to be a longer meeting?
Nope. It'll be our normal meeting. So on that meeting day, just we'd ask folks to come early, be ready to go, 12:15, so that we can jump right into things. But it'll be the same meeting, and Glenn really only wanted about 15 minutes. I don't know if that's enough time for Glenn, but that's what we'll have available to talk about sesquicentennial and things like that. All right, so any other questions on the policy committee? No? Before the end of the semester. You'll find out here shortly. All right, great. Well, so thank you, Tanya, for bringing that up. I think that's great, and this is a great example of hearing something, doing something about it, putting it through the appropriate process. So let's use this as a model and keep bringing more things each meeting. I want to turn it over to Pilar for a second to introduce one of our guests.
So I want to take a moment. Linda Madani is here with us. She actually is the new liaison for the EA with the grad, the GPSA. If you wanted to maybe perhaps give a little quick feel about him, your position here at Cornell.
I'm a presidential student program. I'm a 2017 student and a child of student engagement. And I was in a different series of the family as well as a partner in the children. And I'm being the head of a charge of high school, new college, and
great, and hopefully she'll be giving us all these lovely updates and information that's going on at the GPSA.
Welcome. So moving on, we have our business of the day, which is Paul Bursick. You are. You're the business of the day. We've got a seat right up here in the middle with us. It feels like we're interrogating you when you're down there. I'll allow Paul to give his introduction.
To say anything I want?
Yeah, because he'll probably do a much better job than I will. VJ's passing something out now that will go through after we have Paul's discussion.
What she's passing out is not relevant to what
what Paul's going to say, but keep notes if there's anything that stands out. What we'll do is we'll hope to use the sheet that BJ passed out to spark some dialogue about follow-up and how we can work with Paul moving forward. So I'll turn it over to Paul.
I see several familiar faces around the table, and thank you for having me by. For those who don't know me, I am the Director of Benefit Programs for the university. That covers both Contract College and Endowed, as well as our growing presence in New York City, and I work very closely with the Weill Cornell Medical College as well. Good friends in the HR department there that we work on a regular basis together. The season that we're upon right now is coming up on open enrollment season. We just introduced some new investment funds for the CURP plan. I'm going to try to stop myself when I use these sorts of acronyms, but it's really hard for someone like me to stop using acronyms. That's why I caught myself there. CURP is the Cornell University Retirement Plan. For the endowed employees, that's the plan that you do not put money in. Cornell does on your behalf. And then the TDA plan is the tax-deferred annuity plan that everybody in the university is encouraged to put money in because you all need it. Everyone in this room needs to put money into the tax-deferred annuity plan. So you have money when you reach my age and you're thinking about getting out of here. So it's a different story at my end of the spectrum, at your end of the spectrum. Please take word to the wise from at least a very old, if not a very wise person, because I didn't take my own advice earlier on quickly enough. It's really important to do that. Anyway, we've got new funds for that. I'd be glad to talk about that. We have some changes coming up with open enrollment. I'd be glad to talk about that too. And just general relations between EA and the University Benefits Office, I would also be glad to talk about. So if there are any questions leading off, I can kind of follow your lead, or I can just go in to open enrollment stuff. As some people around the table know, I can talk for hours about benefits, so don't let me get started because I might be down the wrong alley and you may not be the least bit interested in what I have to say.
I'll let you, because I gave you that.
Good, because I was just about ready to launch.
About changes, and I did not know what that
meant. The changes for the investment options?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep, that's good. It all started back in about 2002 with a company called Enron. Enron down in Texas was a perfectly horrid example of what employers should not do. And what Enron did was they told all of their employees, you have a retirement plan, it's all Enron stock. Put money into it, that's where we're putting our money. Great company, you can't go wrong. That was the only choice that the Enron employees had. When Enron went belly up and the stock was worthless, there were thousands of people that had zero balances in their retirement account. Some as old as me, some as young as you. Everyone was very disappointed. The federal government was also very disappointed that this happened. I don't know if justice was properly served, but there was a law that was passed. Finally in 2006, and that was called the Pension Protection Act. That was in direct reaction to what the Enron executives did to their employees. And it was meant for 401k plans, and it said specifically that people could not put, or excuse me, companies, plan sponsors, could not put up a 401k plan anymore and only offer company stock. They had to offer a wide array of investment options so people could naturally balance their portfolios and prepare themselves through proper asset allocation leading toward retirement so they could build their assets in a more reasonable and rational fashion. and prudent fashion, which is an important word in that legislation. The impact of that for all plan sponsors around the country, though, was pretty dramatic. Obviously, Cornell doesn't have stock to sell. For several decades now, we've had a very broadly diversified portfolio, but that wasn't enough. The law called for a lot more. And what we needed to do after the regulations came out and everything, after a few years of trying to figure out what was going on, and that's not us figuring it out, it's the Department of Labor and the Internal Revenue Service figuring out what's going on. They finally set up the regulations. Cornell got the message. The Board of Trustees created a committee called the Retirement Plan Oversight Committee, of which I'm a member. My boss, Mary Opperman, is the chair of the committee. We are charged with, it's an indefinite committee. It'll be around forever. So it's my position and Mary Opperman's position, not us personally, that we're appointed to it. It'll be going on as long as the law is in effect, which we assume is forever. So that's kind of a long way to get around to this, but I wanted to make sure that you realize that there were some very strong federal protections that are involved here. I personally believe in these. I think it's really important for some of the developments that have been here. For some people, they chafe at it because they think it's way too much government regulation. But think of Enron and think of what you would feel like if you were caught in that position. It's not a good thing to be in that position. So what we were charged with was to look over the investment options that were available. The law now requires plan sponsors to monitor these investments and approve them and advance them to employees with proper communications and tell them, we have looked these over and we have decided that these are best in class investments for the asset classes or asset categories that are there. So if you look at the communications that came out from TIA, CREF, or Fidelity, you'll see that there are four tiers and we're monitoring two of those tiers. The other two tiers we are not, and I can get into those details if you want to. But Cornell stands behind this. Now, we felt that we really didn't want our investment office involved in this directly, that we shouldn't have our finance office or HR office, that the best thing to do is to hire a consulting firm that was expert in this and consulting in this, one that had been around for a number of years. We did a formal request for proposal, got four or five different responses back. We followed up with that picked about 2.5 years ago a company called Cap Trust, and they are the ones that made the recommendation about the portfolio offerings. If you look at tiers one and two, a bunch of it is fairly familiar if you're familiar with the fund offerings, but a lot of it is not. I didn't hear of some of these funds in Tier 2. I looked at them. Who is this? What's going on here? But the analysis is sound. We will be looking over these things on a regular basis and putting out recommendations to people about what they should be investing in Tiers 1 and Tier 2. Tier 3 came about because we've had a long history of offering over 300 funds. And at the beginning of this process, we did not want to tell everybody, okay, now you're going to have to pick up all your money and move it into these funds or those funds. Some colleges have even gone so far as to do what's called mapping, which means they gave everybody 6 months to move their money out of funds that weren't recommended, and if they didn't do it, we were going to do it. Stanford University did that. To a lesser extent, Johns Hopkins University did that. They just said, here it is. These are the new funds. You can't go into those old funds anymore. They're off base. Forget about it. So we're not doing that, but eventually we are probably going to have to only sponsor funds that we deem best in class. We still have to figure all this out. We don't know what direction we're going in, what direction the regulations may be gently pushing us. There's no case law on this yet. We're still trying to figure out how far we have to go. But it's fairly clear that we have what's called in the business a fiduciary obligation to you as participants to make sure that the funds that we're recommending are proper, that they give you prudent choices for you to balance out your portfolio with a properly placed asset allocation. Now, throwing words around like that, mean nothing to a vast majority of people, and I understand that. That's why we strongly endorse the what I believe are the extraordinary efforts of TIA, CREF, and Fidelity on this campus to provide you with all the free advice you could possibly need to get where you need to go. You can set up an appointment with them. I encourage you to tell your constituents to set up an appointment with them. They will sit down with you for an hour. Contact information is on our website to set up an appointment. And wherever you are, if you're 18 or 68, it doesn't matter. You really ought to get in front of these folks, and they can help you figure out where you are, where you need to go, how much you may need to save in order to reach your goals, or if your goals are even realistic. You know, I'll tell you right now, if you think you're going to retire at age 55 with 10 years of service, the minimum required by the university to carry your health plan on into retirement, then you'll probably get a gold medal from me. I'm more than happy to pass them out, but I haven't had to. I don't think many people are. In fact, I've never met anyone walking out the door that felt like, I did a great job, I've got all the money that I need, I'm perfectly happy. You know, you may say that, I did great, I did okay, but I'm really concerned about whether I'm going to make it or not, even though they're probably all right. Because it's a difficult transition, it truly is. We're trying to make the front end of that less difficult, trying to make it a little bit easier on you. So we think we're going beyond the regulations in order to give the most help that we possibly can, and leaning on TIA, CREF, and Fidelity to provide that help. I'm almost sure I brought this with me. There are two more sessions in case you have more questions about the specific funds. These were very sparsely attended, the first two. I was really disappointed. I was hoping for better participation from the staff and faculty. But let's see. On Thursday, October 2nd, that's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. 2:30 to 3:30 in G10 Biotech. Very informative lecture by Fidelity on these new funds that are on the Fidelity platform will happen. That's from 2:30 to 3:30. TIA CREF will be Thursday, October 16, from 1:30 to 2:30 in the same place, G10 Biotech. So it's Thursday, October 16 for TIA CREF, Thursday, October 2, or tomorrow, 2:30 to 3:30 for tomorrow, 1:30 to 2:30 for next Thursday.
Just so everybody knows, too, the chair of the EA by position has a seat on the retirement plan oversight committee.
A voting seat. Yeah.
So the employee assembly and the employees do have a representation. A lot of the other people, by nature of their job, are employees. And so there are specifically appointed faculty members on that as well. But there's quite a heavy employee representation in that room. And it's great that the EA actually has a voting, you know, Mary Opperman's vote and the EA's chair vote and Joanne DiStefano's vote are all the same. So it's a great opportunity that they've provided to us to be able to engage. So as more things come up and there's more dialogue and information to report back that can be reported back, I'll make sure that we have that discussion here in those meetings of things we can bring up.
Right.
So the 10% that Cornell puts into my retirement are now going to go into a different fund.
They will go into the funds. They will go into the funds that you currently have them allocated to with no change whatsoever, unless you change. New funds are available, but you need to positively elect to move the money around should you decide that that's what you want to do. I would make sure you set up a time to either visit in person with the Fidelity or TIA person, but both companies also have really good registered representatives over the phone that you can get the same kind of presentation, the same kind of dialogue, and you can call their 800 number, set up an appointment and talk with them the same way before you decide to move money, because if you do move the money on your own accord, then, I mean, that's fine. If you trust your own research and feel like you know how to allocate and that sort of thing, that's what it's there for. It's easy to self-serve, but I would just encourage you to seek that free advice that's there, because it is good, it's objective, and they'll get you where you need to go. If you look at the fund lineups, there are really very few TIA CREF funds in the TIA CREF lineup.
Or Fidelity. So
basically, Curtis, your stuff is going to stay where you have it.
Yeah.
Cornell is not responsible for guaranteeing. If it's one of those funds that they don't say is best in class,
okay,
you're at your own risk, basically.
Yeah.
And that'll change. That's why we're getting walked
away. Yeah. So there's no change in the sense that we are not going to force you to change or ask you to change at this point. Okay, you have the right to stay right where you are, but you have the opportunity now to take advantage of the real changes that are there with new funds. Gina?
Yes. I have a quick question. I'm Gina Giambattista from the Office of Employees, Office of Assembly, sorry. But I'm going to put on my hat as an employee here. I think what you just described and shared is, frankly, why I'm here to make a living. This is so
right.
How I am able to look to the future is such practical and necessary information that I get all those emails from TIA CREF and sort of tuck them away as I need to pay attention to that at some point. But not knowing quite that it was even in the context of this conversation or that these information sessions were going on, I'm wondering how this assembly or the Office of Assemblies can help share that information in a way that people like myself, who I really try to be engaged, but on this one, I'm a dope and shouldn't be. In fact, this is the one where I absolutely shouldn't be. And I wish everybody could hear what you just said, because I'm going to go and make an appointment and sit down. I didn't even know that was an option.
Yeah, I don't think people realize. I mean, I just had an appointment yesterday.
Oh, good.
With TIA CREF and Fidelity, mainly only because my husband is also faculty, well, academic staff here, he stays on top and watches every possible account, checks where they're going, reads those emails, schedules these appointments, and drags me along with it because he signs me up. But in passing to general other colleagues that are employees, and I mention, oh, have you ever made an appointment with, TIA CREF Fidelity, or have you watched how you're plugging things? And the answer I normally get is, oh, I just do the minimal what Cornell puts aside for me or what I have to put aside. Why are you doing specific choices with TIA CREF and Fidelity? You don't need to. That's what I hear it all the time.
I agree. I understand. That's it. Going back to your question, I think several people that have sat in your seat over the years that I've been here have asked the same thing. I don't think we ought to ask one another when that will happen, but what we can do ourselves to encourage our friends and people that we know, because you've given a perfectly good example of what happens. I can send you a dozen emails a month, and you're going to set them aside and say, I really ought to do this.
Right.
You know, Nancy could write a dozen articles a year, and she probably does. Yeah.
But it's the same thing. Everybody's, I've taken all the materials that I have from TIA CREF and Fidelity, and I put them in a pile for it. Well, I can't deal with that now. I'll deal with it later. There's not a deadline attached to this.
Yeah.
There's never a later.
But I think this raises an interesting question, because I think it really gets at the heart of what is communication, what's our purpose, how do we communicate, and what's our responsibility to the community in which we serve, because this should be a cultural sort of movement that we can help spark. Because you're right, I'm not going to read every email you send. It's not going to, reality.
I mean, you're admitting it.
I'm admitting it. Like, I want to own that. We're not going to read the paw print every week.
Right.
We're not going to, an EA newsletter isn't going to do it.
Right.
But how can we help influence a culture? And I think, that's part of the next phase of our discussion, which BJ is going to help us go into, is what are the things we can do outside of the normal realm of thought to really get people to say, hey, peer-to-peer, it doesn't matter if Paul's saying it or Mary's saying it or whoever's saying it, but, it's something that I sought the advice of and it's benefiting me, how can I help you get there? Just thinking differently about it.
So in, on that note, with when I have attempted to do that, and I've had the colleagues going, why are you going, you know, to this peer group? Why are you going to Fidelity? One has to be very cautious and careful of how you present it, because you don't want to say, oh, what the norm is so minimal you need to be afraid to go get something else. Or then they're so stressed with their budget as is, the idea of taking a little bit more out, they almost feel like, oh, well, Pilar gets to put money aside. So it's a very fine line I have found with encouraging that, like, oh, you know, here, you should really meet up with them. They do it so easily. They come to, they do it at the different colleges. I didn't have to leave the vet college for my appointment. All of that, but you still get, I think we would have to present a very pleasant new cultural push to not have that pushback that it just seems
can't afford
to unnecessary. Yes, that they can't afford it.
And not to, throw warm water on it, but I have actually had one of Paul's colleagues, well, she goes to lunch with me, and every time she comes down to the office, I introduce her to somebody else in the office to say, this is the person you should be calling to start this process. Not a one.
Yeah. I mean, you can't make people drink. You can only lead them to water. So.
So my question, Paul, is how does that relate to those of us on the contract side?
That's a very good point, because what, 45-some percent of our employees are on the contract college side. A goodly number of those are covered by NYSERS, which means they don't get a plan like CURP.
Right.
Okay. NYSERS is the state pension program, and it's a good program. In fact, it's an extraordinarily good program for the most part for most people here. If you were out in business and had a defined benefit pension kind of a plan as this is, you would be doing reasonably well over time. But that sort of plan benefits people that are kind of 30 years and out, where they get a maximum guaranteed monthly pension for the rest of their lives. They never have to worry about balances, investing, asset allocation, or any of that other kind of thing. Those plans are dying out. There aren't many of those left. The exempt staff, that means faculty and salaried staff over on the contract college side, are in a plan that's very much like CURP. It's a TIA CREF-based plan, and there are three alternative investment houses in addition to TIA CREF for them. So on the, this is all sponsored by SUNY Central Benefits Office in Albany. They're going through a completely different process. I have no idea what and when they're going to do anything to change any of the asset categories that they have. We know them very well. I'm personal friends with the guy who runs the shop for benefits there, but they're just kind of floating along. And part of the reason is that they're not a private employer as we are, so they're not compelled to follow the Pension Protection Act of 2006 for big chunks of it. Some of it they are, most of it they're not. So whether they're ever going to get around to changing their relationship with TIA CREF, changing the asset allocation, asset categories and the funds that are in it, I have no idea what they're going to do. As with most employers, I think unless they're really pushed to go in that direction, they're just going to stay where they are because it's more of a comfortable space.
We can also, as state pension people,
yeah,
we also have the opportunity to invest in TIA trust.
You do on the tax deferred annuity.
Right, but those new avenues are not open to us?
Yes, they are. The tax deferred annuity plan, which covers all university employees, is part of this change that I've just talked about. But over on your employer pension side, you're either in NYSERS or you're in SUNY ORP, as it's called. And those remain unaffected by this law. To a large extent.
But you can buffer with more in the sense if you wanted to.
You have to put in more.
That's
I would push it a little bit further. You must be enrolled in the TDA. And in fact, that's one of the things that our committee is going to be looking at is automatic enrollment, which is one of the suggestions in the law, not one of the requirements. So we may be looking at, for new employees coming in at least, they have to sign up for 5% of their income or opt out of it. There are several colleges that have gone before us that have done this now already. Yale, for one, did it a couple of years ago. They started out at 5% for all employees, not just new hires, and they had 85% retention rate.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. And the next year, this year, it's bumped up to 6%, and thus far, they say they have very few people who have dropped off, which is great. That means that a whole lot, and we have among our hourly paid employees in the university, just a little bit north of 20% of the people participating. 80% of our people that are hourly paid are ignoring themselves when it comes to retirement. They should not be doing this.
Yeah.
You know, should I send out another email to everybody?
Go ahead.
I just wanted to address that. It has to do with our communication, and it goes back to what you said. I think that this is a very charged issue, because like when I get the email and I start reading through it, I think I don't really understand what some of these things mean. Like, it's a kind of a reaction of I'll deal with it later, but the later, really, I'm still not going to understand it later. So there has to be something like some switch almost that we need to flip or something, so that the reaction is I can get help. I don't understand it, but someone can help me understand it. But because I do think there's a lot of, even though I just put in the minimum. So the idea that, or whatever Cornell is doing is fine. So the idea that maybe there's a way that you can do more given the budget that you have. I think it's just something about presenting it, something that can change that fear. My own fear is the right word.
Instead of a 4-page letter, like three
bullet points.
Yeah.
Bullet.
You know what I mean? Like bringing it down to a.
They're very simple.
Yeah.
You understand what it is. Because when I read the letter, I think I'm freezing. I had not a clue what that 5-page letter was saying. Like, and like I was like, so are you telling me my funds now are going to a different account?
Right.
What? And I didn't get that from that letter. So I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I think
also
one
of the
theories,
maybe simple educational side, because this information that you see. And maybe the 80% can you think of ways of how to break this down to parts of the information to where you don't make it to, or this is meant for more complex people or for older people that are running this amount of money, I don't care. So,
but
just how do we communicate on a base level that everybody understands what's going on? And so more than the emails, because I guess a big part, like you said, a big part of putting it aside is too complex for me right now. I'm looking to data when I can research, and nobody ever has time to do that.
Right.
So think of ways to how we can create data.
So got BJ and then Bridget?
Before we start throwing more systems, what has your office done in terms of like education and things like this? Like, are things that we're suggesting things that you've already done and they haven't worked, or?
I think that we have, I would guess, if I were to guess, that maybe none of you or only a few of you have looked at our web pages lately. There is an extraordinary amount of financial education information on there. We have our regular benefits that come up. We really depend a lot on word of mouth, because I think everyone here has that double understanding. One, that this stuff can be important to me as an individual, but two, that I'm going to ignore entreaties to do something about it because it's too complicated and I don't know. I can't give you knowledge about this. I can't create an urgency in your mind. But working together, we might be able to do something. For instance, if you were to contact your HR representative in your area and tell them that you think in talking around your department, and I mean where you work, and also as an EA representative, that the HR person over your college or over your department really ought to take Paul up on his long-standing offer that I make almost every month to the HR council and out to the HR community. We will speak to any group, 2 to 200, anytime. Tell us. I've been saying this for years and years and years. We will be more than glad to do this and try to help out. We can set up special presentations in departments or in colleges and bring in TIA Craft for Fidelity people. Mm-hmm. We can do these things. But when we try to do them of our own accord, nobody shows up. We rented out or reserved the James Law Auditorium, if you've ever been up to the Vet College. It's huge.
Yeah.
And Fidelity gave a presentation just last week on these new funds. 28 people filled the hall. That was it. After all the letters, after the brochures went out, the announcement was out there, and 28 people showed up for that. The next day, here in G10 Biotech, TIA did a presentation. 25 people packed into G10. That was it. I mean, you know, it is hard. I'm feeling your frustration, and I'm sharing some of my frustration. How do you get through to people and tell them this is really important to you, and you need to listen and you need to do something? I'm wide open to ideas. Don't think that I'm just sitting here thinking, yeah. Because whatever we can do, I think it's really important. You know, financial planning and financial education go hand in hand on these things. And unless people have a familiarity with some of the jargon, it will unjargonize this if it becomes personal. And it'll give people that incentive to begin to think about this in a personal way. And the way to unravel all of that, or at least one of the ways for people who like face-to-face things, is to suggest that they carve out time to come and visit a TIA CREF or Fidelity person in person. They're really nice. They're very knowledgeable. Yeah. They know how to do their work. And no matter where you are, if you have a dollar in the account, and you're new and just starting out, they'll talk to you the same way as they talk to someone my age who has a few more. Okay? And I'm still just as dependent on them for advice as you will be.
Well, my comment was actually just about that. Carving the time out, and particularly the non-exempt staff. So would they be required to use their personal time to meetings, or could be somehow
encouraged on that? Well, I'm a veteran of the initiative to try to carve out time around the campus for wellness time every week for employees. And that really hasn't gotten very far in some places. It has gone very far in some other places. It just depends on where you're at around campus, which is
not good. I
mean, I will say I do have very, you know, supportive supervisors, and the Vet College is great, but I did schedule it during my lunch break and met him at noon because it was going to be easier for me to just run out and get it done.
Right, and a lot of non-exempt staff have only a half an hour.
Right. So we got a lot covered. I mean, it was a wonderfully efficient, and it dealt with both of our accounts and both my husband and I at the same time.
Unfortunately, we are very aware of Cal's retrenchment in this area, and I really regret that. I'm sorry that happened. I know you are. I don't understand why it's the case. Honestly, I just don't understand it. I've heard it. I've heard it explained to me. You know. Maybe it's like me explaining a retirement plan to somebody. They're just not getting it. I'm not getting it. I don't understand why it is. But I honestly encourage you to work with us in any way that you possibly can. And I would suggest that you talk to your HR person, because they've heard it from me many times, and perhaps together. And if we start little cells of awareness, they might grow a little bit more. Who knows?
Just one more thought. We were talking a little bit about the communications around it, and I think Pilar brought up a good point that there's a fine balance. I have to say, though, that what was most compelling about what you came in is you came in, introduced yourself, and almost the first 2 minutes was, you need to do this because you can't do it without it. You need to invest in the long term or whatever. I can't remember what it was. I wrote it down. but that is the tax-deferred annuity. That's something I actually hadn't paid attention to. The TDA meant nothing to me. Having a person in your authority say that is compelling. Having a meeting to talk about investments, to talk about retirement is like, that's the stuff that I go, oh my gosh, I don't know anything about this. But coming right out and just saying it, you need to do this.
Well, I don't think that is said often enough.
So my question with the TDA, is that a fixed fund, or do you have choice in the TDA?
You have the same investment choices in the TDA that you have with...
And that is administered through both TIA and Fidelity?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Two different platforms, as they call it.
Okay.
You can put your money in with Fidelity or with TIA CREF, and under the new setup, many of those funds are the same, regardless of which vendor that you choose. There are a couple of things that are going on around campus that I do want to get to, want to make sure that you're aware of them. There's a financial fitness challenge that TIA CREF sponsors for us every year. Enrollment starts September 15, and I can get Greg the URL for this. There are tracks that you can take. They're 5 one-hour courses. It really helps in terms of basic financial planning. It's free. You sign up for it. We had the most people sign up for this than any college that was participating in this nationwide program last year. And we're hoping for a repeat of this. And everyone that we know that took it felt really comfortable that it was a good thing, either refreshed them or taught them some good things. So I will get there. Get this to you. You do have to complete the program by November 21 to earn a certificate, and several of the vendors have some nice little table prizes kinds of things. So we've got a couple of hundred of those that we really would love to pass out.
Is it online?
It is. Yeah. It is an online thing. So. Oh, there we go. There's a happy graduate of the Financial Fitness Challenge who is eligible to take it again. Good.
Is this open?
Maybe you'll get something to put in the backpack.
That's why I'm like, is this open to like spouses or partners, or is it only Cornell employees?
Grad you know, I don't know that. It is open to grad students.
But there are, so yesterday I learned that they have, TIA CREF, so they have sort of a new banking online services that they can also offer. So I think some of them could offer you different options that you independently, that wouldn't even be able to come out of your paycheck.
Because I think that's one of the things, though. It's great that it's for employees, but usually in a two-person environment in a home, there's discussion about that. So it's, I know a lot about investing, and maybe you don't, and it might create some tension. So I don't know if there is benefit to having
take it together,
doing something
because
like that.
Yeah, it's online. Sit there together, and you know, what is it? Coffee, tea, wine, beer, whatever it is.
Probably
just
wine.
Sit down and then food and beverage. Food and beverage.
So in the interest of time, we've got one more question, and then if there's anything else that Paul wants to sort of highlight or hit on for the open enrollment period or any other major changes, would be best. Curtis, did you have?
It wasn't a question. It was just a statement. It was just something that you can't stand out when everything was just
less.
Maybe instead of surveying, we could hand out, you should
or
save.
Or like for a lady, maybe you could just send like a big PowerPoint.
Yeah,
like,
a Paul thing.
When was the last time you looked at your retirement?
That might be very good.
You need to do that.
Options. You need to do this. That's what we need to do. Because a lot of people don't want to hear it.
You have to invest more. I put that in quotes, Paul.
There you go. I agree. I don't, you know.
Don't think it's enough because it's not.
Right before David speaks, I think that's a perfect prelude to the conversation from
his
our
laugh,
CEO.
People
are
going to remember Emma.
I love what he
said.
Right?
Yeah, we're going to collab. So we can take that offline and follow up as we plan more and finalize those details, which the briefing for the president's office will go out today, as promised. Paul, is there anything else that you wanted to highlight or hit
on
in the next?
Open enrollment, I'll be brief on this. Open enrollment this year is pretty straightforward. We're not, for the first time in a few years, introducing new plans, dropping old plans on the endowed side. For the contract college folks here, we have no idea what they're going to do. We never do. We find out usually around Thanksgiving. that their option transfer period started yesterday and hurry up because it's just this time, and that's just the way it is. So I prefer to talk about the inbound side because I direct that side as opposed to react. On the inbound side, we're looking at a 6% increase in premiums this year. We need to have that in order to better balance from past years the cost of the plan that we've incurred. Remember that what we always aim for, or if you didn't know, I'll tell you now, that we're always aiming for an 80-20 split, that the cost of the plan have for decades been split 80% Cornell picks up, 20% you pick up. And by that, we're talking about the claims that come through. So your co-pays and your co-insurance, those kinds of numbers that you put in terms of dollars, add up to 20% of the total cost at the end. Right now, Cornell's above 80%. We need to get it back. And this is just a regular thing that we do to balance out things as time goes on. So we've got a 6% increase. In order to try to help that, we don't have a whole lot of control over medical inflation or what the doctors charge. But where we have a little bit more control is in prescription drugs. And with that, we are going to be doing a couple of things. One that I want to mention because it's very consumer-oriented. We've done this before at other times for other very important reasons, and we're going to need to do it again this year. We're going to be letting people know that you can still shop anywhere that you want to for prescription drugs on the inbound side if you carry an Express Scripts card. Again, it's not Aetna, it's Express Scripts. It's a separate company. But if you go to either a Walgreens pharmacy or a CVS pharmacy, your copay is going to be $10 more than it would otherwise be. So you can go to Rite Aid, you can go to Walmart, you can go to Wegmans, you can go to any of the other pharmacies in the area. Gannett Student Pharmacy, they fill employee prescriptions as well. Any of the other pharmacies except Walgreens or Caremark. Walgreens and Caremark do not give us good discounts. This $10 is what helps balance that out. So it's actually much better for you, and we're translating this into the copay language. It's much better for you if you go to Rite Aid, or if you go to Kinney Drugs. They're included in it as well, the other major chain in this area. As far as I know, there's only one CVS store here in town. There are no Walgreens here in town, but there are Walgreens to the north of us in Syracuse, Cortland area, in Auburn, and in Geneva. So I know they're up there. We don't have all that many employees up there on the endowed side, but they're there. Modern world, very few people have a very close personal relationship with their pharmacist. You don't see them. They're behind the counter stuffing bottles. And they don't spend any time with you because that's not how they're paid. They're paid on a quota. They have to fill so many scripts today or they don't get as much money. So we are trying to work with that and just say, find yourself another anonymous pharmacist, essentially. The Kinney's Drug up in Trumansburg, I highly recommend. They're really nice people. And they will spend time with you. You do too? Okay, yeah. Kinney's is good. And the folks here at the Gannett Pharmacy are really good as well. But we are trying to balance things out. CVS, Caremark, and Walgreens will not give the same kind of ingredient cost discounts and the same dispensing fees. Those are the two elements in the pricing. So they charge a higher dispensing fee and they charge a higher ingredient cost, despite the fact that we've got a lot of bargaining power with the largest pharmacy benefit management firm in the country, Express Scripts, working on our behalf. So this is a way of trying to balancing out those books. Our people in the past have shown themselves remarkably sensitive to dollars. We've done this once before, and the migration over to the right drug stores was phenomenal.
Oh, wow.
Without complaint, most people went straight over. And I'm talking about 90-some percent of the spend in the preferred drug stores. It was actually 98% back in the Health Now days. I don't know if you remember Health Now from a few years ago. So we know this works. It sends a message to the pharmacies that need some attention paid to them. There's one other one, by the way, that's on the fence, that Tops supermarket. Wegmans is okay. Walmart, as I said, Tops is on the fence. They don't know if it's worth their while. Okay. If you shop at Tops and you get your prescriptions filled there, let them know. I plan on visiting those two stores next week and letting them know what we're about to do, and just to say, if you value Cornell business, you better get with the program, give us the discounts we deserve, and we'll put you right back on the preferred list. I can do it just like that. But if you don't, I can also look the other way just like that, and we'll walk away and you lose and I win, because my folks are going to move.
So one more question, and then we do have some other things on the agenda that we need to finish up. So
I'm sorry, I told you I'd go on.
No, that's okay.
No,
okay.
No.
Okay.
I'm
just checking in on the benefits on the state insurance plan with ICAN. There's one lifetime ICAN provided, and the rest is out-of-pocket. I am just flabbergasted at that, and I'm trying to understand that. We all would like dental care included, obviously, but when it comes to eye care, it's like, well, you gotta have to see a student. I kind of understand that. Is there any comments you can make there?
I'm just as frustrated as you are with what the benefit offerings are for the contract college side in terms of health. We have absolutely no influence with that whatsoever. We have considered from time to time introducing a vision plan or a dental plan. The trouble on the contract college side, the trouble with that is that then the Empire plan might be tempted to just say, that's primary, then we're not going to worry, we're going to pay even less because your employer is offering it. It's a tricky business when you're dealing with the state about these things.
Are there different benefits for different colleges within
yes.
state? Oh, okay, that's
no,
right.
Not within state.
The state. Okay.
No. On the land grant institution side, they're different than on the endowed side.
Right, okay.
But within those groups, they're the same.
The exception is if you have a medical reason.
Right. Okay. See, that's what.
So yeah, diabetes.
Right. Okay. For others.
So you're talking about a routine refractive exam for eyes,
yeah.
And
right,
if you
okay.
if you go in and you're judged normal, you don't need eye glasses.
One lifetime.
Right.
One
so
one.
I have specific issues. I go and I just do my COVID. Okay.
So your backup vision plan is flexible spending accounts. You can at least pre-tax it.
So I think all great topics of discussion. We really appreciate Paul being here. Thanks, Paul, for I think the work you do on behalf of really all the employees. We probably couldn't have a better person in your role. So we really appreciate that.
So please help me.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
Talk to your friends and talk to your HR person. I'm telling each of you directly, I will come into your department or someone on my staff who probably knows more than me about whatever it is you're asking about. And we will come in and we will talk to you. And it can be a totally open question and answer period, or we'll come with the presentation set and ready to go.
Thanks so much, Paul.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. So we're going to jump right in. I'm going to turn it over to BJ. I would ask that we do follow some order in the next part of the conversation. So we can try to get through this and get as much done in the remaining 15 minutes or so that we have. So I'm going to turn it over to... At 7 minutes. I was stretching it just to see if we could be more efficient, but I've got an accurate clock. So I'm going to turn it over to BJ. Thanks for keeping me honest.
Well, I only have coverage on... I'm on emergency coverage, so actually I have to go.
That's
it.
Okay.
So the first thing I have is the original sheet I passed us to begin with. As Paul was saying, we're looking for ways to do things. So I think we've had a few presentations now, budget and benefits, where we've heard a lot of good things, but I always want to make sure that turns into action. So the sheet I gave to you, two sections on it, it's what actions you want to see as a result of the presentation you heard today, and what information led to that action. And I'd like everyone to fill this out and
leave it.
Just a task to me before you leave, just so we can start collecting these things. We can do a lot of things, but one of the official tasks of an assembly like ours is to be able to pass resolutions. So I'd like to make use of the tools that we have at our disposal. So at least pass get our official stamp on. We want to see a parity between endowed and contract colleges. We want to see, you know, that everyone has to opt out of participating in a TDA plan, whatever those things might be. Let's start putting the things that we hear and the information that we receive into actual actions that benefit the rest of the community. So please take a moment to do that, and if you don't listen to anything else that we say today, let the one thing be you turn this in so we can start getting the That being said, I'm going to do that every meeting. So executive chair with
more,
me.
We need more copies.
Okay.
In the future.
Sure. So I just
print 100 and just bring a folder.
Certainly do that. There might be more in my divider. I haven't quite figured out more, but I will certainly have that.
No problem. I just wanted to let you know these days.
Cool. Thank you. So.
Oh, you got a camera on. So the first resolution we had was that's gonna be the full screen. So everybody has it in front of them. So the screen is just if we decide to make any edits.
So what we'd like to present is working off of our retreat, kind of our idea of pushing ourselves in a new direction and getting ourselves really out into the workplace and giving us a place to go and where we'd like to be. Taking the mission statement that I think Nancy has just left us to, but the mission and vision statements that were proposed from that working group and retreat, and combining them into working items that we can then present as who we are and what we want to do. So with that, we have our mission and vision statements. The mission, and this is kind of extra wording here too, but let me just read off the resolution as a whole. So whereas the Employee Assembly, or the EA, has taken strides to adopt a new direction and statement of purpose for the organization, whereas the EA has determined from the organization retreat the need for a concise and cohesive identity to better communicate its purpose to the staff community, whereas a working group of assembly members have contributed time and effort to creating mission and vision statements, and whereas the need for a comprehensive and organized communications plan was deemed necessary for the proper implementation and adoption of these statements, be it resolved that the EA adopt the following as mission and vision statements. So mission reads, I believe the updated one that is, a representative organization ensuring collaboration with key university stakeholders. The Cornell University Employee Assembly advocates for all staff interests in an effort to empower and improve the staff experience. So again, the mission is who we are and what we do. The vision is where we want to be, and that is the Employee Assembly actively promotes an improved staff experience through regular engagement at every level of the university to ensure staff members' viewpoints are a shared priority in the university decision-making. Again, those two statements really work together. So be it further resolved that the EA adopt the accompanying positioning and brand proposal as a way to implement the brand and marketing objectives. Be it further resolved that the EA Executive Committee be the responsible party for implementing these statements in the first year. And be it further resolved that the EA Executive Committee determine the success of the branding campaign and determine its next course of action at the end of the assembly session. And I forgot the last date, so that's what it says May 20. So for me, a resolution is very much stating the reasons why we have something, to be a result plus seeing what we want to do, and ensuring that that also has some kind of a time frame and responsible party. So that's why it includes the executive committee being a responsible party, and then having that deadline of the last session in May determining its effectiveness and where we want to go from there. So things are about that being said, and me presenting that, and let me just update the one line on the...
Does anybody have any questions or comments, initial feedback, thoughts?
I think it's really good. I just think there's one more question. Because it's there be the awkward thing. Is that okay? Please. So it says the employee suddenly advocates for all staff interests in an effort to empower the staff experience. You don't empower the staff experience, you empower staff. So I would just put empower staff and include the staff experience.
What line number?
So line 13,
yeah,
it would read to empower staff and improve the staff experience.
Because you don't empower the staff.
in Philadelphia.
Yep.
Logistics. Or
yeah.
But other than that, I think it's fantastic. And mm-hmm. I really appreciate all the work.
We do, Big Joe. We appreciate it.
Well, how cold, BJ?
Wow.
It's all just work to me.
I don't even see you, Greg. I see your hair.
It is 1:29. So if there's a motion on the floor before we get to 1:30.
Motion to approve?
Is there any dissent to moving forward with that? All right, seeing none, all of those in favor? All of those opposed? Any abstentions? All right, that passes unanimously. We now have a mission. We have a mission. A mission and a vision.
Instead of the drinking.
We are at 1:30, officially the end time on the agenda.
Yeah.
I would ask if there's maybe 2.5 minutes where BJ could present the second piece of business, which is a resolution we'd like to try to get ahead of the ball on. Is there a motion to extend by 3 minutes?
Okay, 3 minutes.
Any dissent? All right, great. BJ?
So, again, it's an exciting time. We have a new president. Again, I think some folks were concerned about coming to shared governance. So I want to be one of the first assemblies, because I feel like simply the EA is jumping on someone else's bandwagon than leading that charge and becoming part of that competition. So I have 40 started contacting other assembly heads. Some have expressed interest, but not enough in time to get officially sponsored on this, which we can fix at a later date. But again, it's a resolution to welcome the incoming president and invite them to participate in shared governance and making sure that shared governance is a part of their transition and orientation plan. So the resolution reads, I'm sorry I did it small, I don't know why.
Just want to read the results.
Yeah, so I can just read the result plus. Be it resolved that the Employee Assembly invites newly elected President Elizabeth Garrett to engage with and be an active participant in the shared governance system at Cornell University. Be it further resolved that participation with the shared governance system at Cornell be a part of the presidential transition and orientation plan.
Curtis?
The only comment I have is one of the whereas. Maybe we can do this after we vote on it. We can just add a section about why she's qualified and what she brings in. Because I just feel like it's important. Like she has a very strong publishing record. Blah, blah, blah. I just feel like something about why she's very.
But I didn't quite catch the whole part about why this is just coming from the Employee Assembly. And it seems like.
So our effort is that we take this sort of on a roadshow and get the assemblies to adopt either the same resolution or a similar resolution, just sort of making a statement of it is important for us that you engage with our constituent group and you engage in the environment that's created here at Cornell by the Charter of the University, which is the shared governance system. And this is how we look forward to engaging with you moving forward.
So the plan is not to vote on this particular wording of this resolution, but to use it as a...
Nope. So this is BJ has entered this in as a resolution. So the goal would be that if we adopt this as a resolution, we would like to be a leader in this effort and say, we've passed this resolution. We'd like you all now to sign on in your own respective assemblies. And do either the same or similar so that President Scorton can communicate that through that says this is important to our assemblies.
Okay, but I thought there was a concern, you know, we wanted to try to do these types of resolutions together.
Yes.
As a body.
So
and
that is the fact. But the reason why I wanted to present this is that I'd like the EA and the staff to not be always just signing on after something else is. So I'd like us to put this resolution forth. I'd love it if it passed, but then also I'm already in communication with the other chairs of things to potentially present this to other assemblies to get their co-sponsorship on this and really lead the rest of the assemblies in presenting shared governance as a priority at Cornell to the new president.
Sure. So people can sign on as co-sponsors after a resolution?
No, they would have to adopt a resolution in their own assembly.
So they wouldn't be signing on to this, which are co-sponsors?
No. They wouldn't. Correct. I mean, if we had a list of all of the chairs and all of the vice chairs, they could do that today, but we don't. So ideally, they'll have to adopt their own resolution in their respective assemblies.
I think in this particular case, more is better. It's just this is making a broad statement from each of the different assemblies that this is important. Shared governance is an important part of business at Cornell. Rather than one, they'll just likely be four, and the EA is leading the charge. And if I may also make a comment to Curtis's point quickly, I would suggest that it's almost irrespective of her particular interest in shared governance or in politics or policy or things, that by virtue of her being the president of this institution where we value shared governance, we invite her to participate and see its value. That to call out her particular talents or expertise in this is almost... It's a bonus that she does have that, but let's not, it's just by virtue of her position.
Well, I mean, I get that, but I was just like, when last yesterday, you know, those four qualities, I think that I wrote them down, that they mentioned, I just thought those were very nice descriptions, and one of the things I always get concerned with is a lot of people are saying, we have a woman president, but not that we have a person qualified, and I just want to make sure that we highlight those qualifications and not that. Just because she's a woman.
But I
don't want to, like, she did or VA did, but just like a simple statement, like, I just feel like
this says nothing about the fact that she's a woman. That was only brought into the conversation.
No, I'm not saying that. I think it's just a sentence.
So there's two things that I had, BJ, on line 12. It should be shared governance system. And then I'm wondering if I could be added as a sponsor, as chair and the executive vice chair, we could sponsor this. And then if there's any motions to entertain, we'd happy to entertain those because we are at time.
Thoughtful dialogue and consideration for ideas and issues brought forth by the EA, just to specifically hone in on the really rich relationship we've had with President Fortin previously to try to say, and we're hoping for the same with you.
So we are over time and just lost a quorum. So this will either be tabled unless we want to have a discussion or vote right now. I do think that that's a great line that Linda just brought up.
Yeah, that is actually really good, Linda. It would be good to add it.
But we... Wait, how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8?
You can vote.
I've counted myself. Well, how many do we have on the... 19? And all positions are filled? So good news is we'll have a perfect resolution to debate at the next meeting.
Yeah.
Because time has overtaken...
Yeah,
it's really not official.
Are we adjourned?
Why not?
I guess the meeting is adjourned by time.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.